Welcome to the Unstoppable Leadership Spotlight, influential leaders and their game-changing insights. I'm Jacqueline Strominger, CEO and founder of Leap to Your Success. That's leaptoyoursuccess.com. We help entrepreneurs, leaders, and CEOs grow their business, become unstoppable high achievers in their careers and life, gaining that 1% edge. We believe every professional has the power within them to leap to their greatest success that not only will impact their life, but the lives of the people they touch. So stick around to the end of the show and we will share with you how you can be our next guest. So stick around for those 15 to 20 minutes and let's be unstoppable. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Unstoppable Leadership Spotlight podcast, where we hear from influential leaders and their game-changing insights. I'm Jacqueline Strominger, your host. And today I want to welcome our amazing guest, Adam Pavlitz. So a little background on Adam. He is the CEO and president of Antigo Cleaning Systems, an internationally franchised commercial cleaning brand headquartered in South Florida. He joined Antigo in September of 2009 and served as president since April of 2015. I love hearing stories of growth like that, so can't wait to talk about that. He was appointed CEO in May of 2018. In January 2010, he was the director of human resources, franchise development, and in September, he was named VP of operations. So before joining Antigo, he was employed by IBM Corporation as Growth Initiatives and Expense Analyst. Adam holds an MBA from the University of Miami and a Lean Six Sigma Green Belt from Nova Southeastern University. He is a certified franchise executive and a Cleaning Industry Management Standards Certified Expert. I didn't even know they had that. Wow. Okay, so Adam is also a thought leader on the Forbes Business Council and a regular contributor to Entrepreneur and Forbes publications. So welcome. That is a lot of awesomeness. So
enough about me.
Enough about you. No, but honestly, a lot about you. So I am so obviously welcome to the podcast, and I'm so glad.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here. So just even reading your bio and there is some serious, amazing leadership things that have happened in your career. So I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about your journey, even from, being an employee at IBM to coming to Antigo and having this great rise.
Yeah. No, thank you for the introduction. That was, I appreciate that.
When I was at IBM, I actually joined in the 2008. And then it was toward the end of 2009 I think everybody went through the Great Recession there. And IBM did a round of layoffs. I wasn't laid off. I was on the team of analysts at that time. So it was growth initiatives. It was focusing on, can we go into this new line of business? Can we take on this new project? What's the ROI on it? And then it quickly pivoted to basically they were giving me employee numbers, no names, I was doing analyses on who we were going to let go of, who was going to get the golden parachute, whose parachute wasn't going to be so golden. and it left quite the pit in my stomach. End of 2008, I was down for the holidays. I was chatting with my dad. He was the founder of Antigo. He founded in 89. I didn't get involved until 2009. I had no desire to get into the family business. But I was down for the holidays and he goes, "You got to check this thing out. I think I got the tiger by the tail." And it was about 6 months later, maybe 7 months later that I joined. And he goes, "Congratulations, you've left your highfalutin finance job. And your first job at Antigo is you're going to be a telemarketer by day and a franchisee's assistant at night cleaning a daycare."
And this was like,
you know, pre-diaper genie. Yeah, sweet, sweet. Pre-diaper genie days, right? So you go and you're emptying, you know, a 55-gallon drum of dirty diapers, and you know, you gotta hold your breath and tie it off as fast as you can.
Oh, like, where's
And oh yeah, oh yeah.
that nose pad? Yeah.
But so from 2009 for a couple of years, I was actually in a training program where basically I worked through every role in every oh, look who snuck in, my daughter. Excuse me, honey. Say hi. Well,
Hi.
that is working. I love you. Go. Mwah. I told them, I was like, you can't come in. I'm gonna be on a podcast. But you know,
Yeah,
I
I
have
get
my
it.
kids are six, my kids are 6, 3, and 1, so I get, you know, about as much listening as you would expect.
Hey, you know what?
But
It's the best thing about being our own boss and being an entrepreneur and having your own business. It's
yeah.
but that's part of life.
Exactly. Today was a remote day. But no, so I worked through all the roles. I did sales, I did customer service, and this was all in the regional office, the regional South Florida office. I didn't know I was even at the franchisor until another year later. And then when I became started working at the franchisor, I worked through all the roles there. I think my original title was like franchise developer or something kind of generic like that. And it basically just meant I was traveling the country, meeting with all our franchisees, and you know, I'm probably late 20s at this point, so I don't know anything. I'm just, you know, I learned what I learned, but at the same time, you know, I'm traveling the country, and I had to very quickly take a kind of a servant leadership approach of, you know, here's what I know, you know, but how can we help you? How can we help you grow your business? How can we help you know, be more profitable, whatever it may be? And I feel like that's sort of the mentality that I've maintained as we've, you know, as I've moved up the ladder and as we've grown. And so when I was appointed president in 2015, the former president, he was retiring, and he gets me a business card holder, and it says PUDSOBIC, and I go, what does that even mean? And he goes, it stands for poor, unfortunate, dumb SOB in charge. It's like, what a way to wish me luck, you know?
Oh my God, that is fantastic. So your rise to taking this over. So back up a little. So your dad started your family started this business.
Correct.
And then when did you franchise?
So he started it in 89. We're actually, so I'll get into this in a second, but we're actually a little bit unique because when you say franchise, most people think of a two-tier franchise. So, you know, Subway and then like the corporate office and the people who own the restaurants. Ours is a three-tier model, so it's a little different, and it's common in our industry, not common in franchising, I would say. Different from like an area developer model for those familiar with franchising in general. But the so when he so we founded it in 89, it was a conventional cleaning company, and it wasn't until 91 where it was just that office. It was one office, and they were selling the unit franchises and then selling the commercial cleaning to clients. And that was it for 8 more years. It wasn't until 1999 when I guess he said, you know, I think we could do this. I think we could do this in other markets. And the first master franchise was sold, and so we opened Tampa, Florida. And then so now, you know, fast forward, that's 1999. So what is it, 25 years of master franchising, and now we're at 48 master franchises across the US and Canada with 1,800 unit franchises.
That's awesome. That's amazing.
Thank you.
And when you think about so the growth in there and the leadership, You said you've got 50 employees where you are right now. And so talk to me a little bit about how you work with your employees from a leadership standpoint, and then also your, because you're also your clients and your part of your team are your franchise people, both
Yep.
master and the, unit. Like, so how do you work with those two? Do you look at them as separate units?
Yeah, no, it's a lot to keep track of. Step one, hire a really rock solid assistant because otherwise there's no, but yeah, no, I mean it is. It's you have to look at basically, you're looking at everybody as your customer. Yes, you have your cleaning client that is the final end customer. But if you think about how our model works, I'm three layers away from the cleaning customer, right? The corporate office, we don't have any cleaning clients. We have the master franchise. They would manage a territory. So, maybe they manage Vegas or Atlanta, but it's a greater metropolitan area, big territories. There's usually 2, 3, 4, 5 million people in these territories. And then within that territory, the master franchise sells unit franchisees. So these are folks looking to get into the cleaning business. And they're simultaneously managing a sales team that's selling the commercial cleaning contracts, and then they kind of broker the two together. So first, maybe let me just dissect the model a little second, then I'll circle back to your question. So kind of putting in a simple way to think about the business model. When I say commercial cleaning, most of your listeners are probably picturing, right, like the guy with the mop in the bucket or a vacuum or emptying a garbage can or something like that. And that's part of it. Usually commercial cleaning is done at night. So when I say when you think of when you picture commercial cleaning, you're actually thinking of what we would call our unit franchisee and their staff. So it's they own a cleaning business. They hire a crew, they learn the chemicals, the equipment, keep the buildings clean. But the question is then, how did they get those customers? Who's invoicing those customers? Who's doing all the marketing? Who's doing the daytime job, right? Because all of a sudden cleaning becomes this very 24/7 industry. And so what our model does, it says, wait a minute, we could probably make this work by splitting the day and the night, shift into two businesses. So now you have your unit franchisee in, your hypothetical Atlanta market. And all he has to focus on is managing his team, keeping the buildings clean, the end. He has zero sales staff, zero accounting people, zero folks that are customer service people. Maybe he does some of the customer service himself or something like that, but very, very minimal. And then on the flip side, you have the master franchisee, and that's the daytime aspects of the industry, right? So they're gonna have the usually that's like a mid-career executive, usually someone who's managed a team, a sales team or a customer service team, and they're hiring the sales team. They're the ones with the website, doing all the PPC and all the advertising and everything like that. They go out, sell the commercial cleaning contracts in the greater Atlanta area in that example. And then once they've sold it, they have unit franchisees that they've sold and say, okay, depending on where it's located, we're gonna broker it to this person or that person. And so it creates this cool synergy because now that master franchise has zero cleaning people on staff. So it's like the white collar in the blue collar industry, while the franchisee has no salespeople. So everyone's saving money by not having the huge chunk of overhead for fully dedicated positions. Master has no cleaning, unit has no sales, and it turned in kind of into a win for everybody. So when you talk about leading all of that, it's a lot of, I mean, it really is. It's talking to very different audiences every single time. With the master franchisees, right? Again, these are business executives. These are my direct, there's almost like channel marketing, right? Like it's I have to make sure things are extremely vetted, extremely looked over, because if I pass it to them, it's only ultimately train the trainer, because then they have to then train their unit franchisees and their staff on anything I show them. So we have to really, I mean, everything has to be extremely buttoned up to make sure your master franchisees are getting what they need. And then with the unit franchisee, right? It's a lot of these folks are coming into business, for their first time ever. It's I think I want to say it's like 75% of our unit franchisees start with like a 30,000, $20,000 to $30,000 level of business of cleaning revenue that they're looking for. So it's like it's a side hustle. It's a really great side hustle, right? Because it's something you can do after hours. It's usually it's outside of typical business hours. Most start as a side hustle. It's just, hey, I'm looking to make a couple extra bucks, and I heard about this whole cleaning franchise opportunity. I'm trying to make a, buy a new car, a new house, whatever, and I'm looking for a few bucks. But at the same time, we just gave an award not that long ago to a lady and her team in the Philadelphia area. She's a unit franchisee. Her business as a unit franchise is doing $1 million, over $1 million a year. And so, it can start as a side hustle, but it also can scale to, something pretty sizable, for the right person.
I mean, and so that part is really, I find that fascinating because somebody can start that as that side hustle, as you said, and then grow it. So they have this, it's an entrepreneurial aspect in that as that unit and creating that feeling of being an entrepreneur, having that side business. And so where can she go? Like, can she go? Would you put her into something? Like, could she potentially become a master?
We've had several. Let me think about this. The Orlando market were former unit franchisees that became master franchisees. The Cleveland market was they were outside of our model, but they owned a cleaning business before they came to Antigo and said, I want to become a master franchisee. It's definitely possible. It really is like two different business strategies though, right? Because someone like as an example, if I said, Jacqueline, you're a phenomenal cook, you should start a restaurant. And you go, oh yeah, great, yeah. And maybe you are, I don't know, maybe you make a really mean, I don't know, chicken franchise. I don't, whatever. And
I can cook, but I would never want to open up a restaurant.
but so and exactly though, and the reason why is right, because being a good cook and managing a restaurant are like night and day. It's, you could be a phenomenal cook, but then it turns into, okay, what do you know about like marketing, recruiting, turnover, spoilage,
Right. There's two
inventory. I mean,
sides of
it's
the house,
very
right? Yeah, there's two sides of it. So there's the back
exactly.
end and then the front end. And those two, right? You could be a great cleaner, but do you want to run the business or would you rather be cleaning?
Well, it's not even being a cleaner, right? Because you can get your cleaning big business large enough where you're not personally cleaning either. But it's are you a, do you want to manage a team operationally, or are you someone who's better at maybe the sales and marketing side of things, which usually is two different, very very different personalities when you're more customer service operational focused versus sales and marketing.
Right. Very true. Very true. So when thinking about your teams as, there's different people that you have to speak to. One thing that I think is always common in any company, whether you're at the top or no matter where you are, there is a level of values and a vision that you have as the head of this company. How do you share that with all these different layers in your company?
Yeah, you talk a lot. What I've found is, and this I probably learned this the best during COVID. When all of that went down, we were, the world had no idea what was going on, and so all we were doing is we said, okay, we need to stay in front of everything we possibly can and share that with our franchisees. I think originally we were sharing it, like we had twice a week calls. We back down to once a week calls and then to every other week calls where the entire system was on. And it was, here's what we know. Here's where you can, get PPP money. Here's where you go to, get your masks. Here's where you go to get certain disinfectant chemicals that we need for our model.
Here's what's happening in the news. Whatever.
Right.
Just communicate, communicate, communicate. And so coming out of COVID, I think it was eye-opening, because you go, okay, if we can communicate and quite literally like pivot our entire business model from a cleaning business of recurring things like schools and businesses that are now closed to now we're a disinfecting company, and we literally wrote and are one of the only certified disinfecting companies in the country now. Even though that means nothing, right? We're all back to being animals and not washing our hands and stuff,
Well,
but at the time.
although I would say if you're a certified disinfecting company, then that's like a huge like sales tool to call the cruise ships who end up with the norovirus.
Exactly. And so there's definitely, obviously, there's certain, I joke, right? Obviously, there's certain industries that, anytime when you talk about schools with young kids, they're absolutely looking for it. Any kind of medical hospital, doctor's offices, cruise ships, like you said, any of those things are still ha holding a much higher level of need for disinfection than pre-COVID. It was everybody. It was, your local pizza place was like, hey, we need to be disinfected. Your and so we pivoted the business model, literally wrote the book on how to do disinfect. And there's like, I mean, it's there's all these silly things like when you're disinfecting, when you if you wipe a surface, you can only wipe in one direction if you're disinfecting. Otherwise, you're just spreading the germs around. There's a certain amount of time a chemical has to stay on a surface. So that was sort of one of the running jokes is the people that thought they were, using Lysol wipes to disinfect their desk. It was like, no, you just have lemony fresh germs that never that you didn't actually kill on your desk. But I mean, to pivot our entire model in a matter of months. It took constant open communication over and over and over. And so we've kind of taken that, and obviously it's not weekly calls anymore. But being out ahead of everything, regularly communicating our vision. So we did right coming out of COVID, we were probably a mid-60s, maybe 66, $68 million in revenue brand. And I sat with our leadership team and said, I want to be a $100 million brand, and I want to do it in 2 years. And we put together like a five-prong plan. We cast the vision out to our master franchises, and part of it was helping them. We actually gave them like royalty rebates on when they were hiring some of their sales staff. We did all that. We did these really great partnerships with sales training organizations to really help push and grow. And we were able to do it in 19 months. Stupid me, I don't know if it was the, brains or ego. Then just a year ago at our conference, I said, and now I want to be a $300 million brand, and here's our vision, and here's our plan. The plan is triple revenue by the end of 2028. And now it's beating the drum. It's here are the, we've all sat together collaboratively to come up with what are the aspects of the plan and what we're going to implement, what are we going to focus on. And when you have those, it makes it very easy to say no to everything else. And then it's just laser focus on these are the areas that we're going to be continually working on to grow revenue for the brand.
I love that. So talk to me a little bit about your leadership team that you entrust to help you grow.
Yeah, we have it's growing. I actually so my leadership team prior to COVID was relatively small. I think we had probably maybe five people. Now it's double that. Partly, I think we all got bit by the, what was it, in 20, I think it was 2021, where we all got bit by the Great Resignation, where people were leaving. Our turnover was like nothing for years, and it was a lot of the team that had been there for 10 years, 20 years. I have a lady who's retiring this year. She's been with us 30 years. I mean, it's, you don't they don't make people like that anymore. But the So up until then, it was a small team, and we were, I would say we were extremely reactive. It was, oh, a franchisee, that's kind of like the double-edged sword of the servant leadership is, oh, what else do you need? What else do you need? What else do you need? And it's waiting for them to tell us what they need and then reacting rather than, getting with everyone and then trying to create a proactive approach. So we get bit by this great resignation bug in 2021. A few people, a few people left that were in key roles, and I go, man, I can't ever get caught flat-footed like that again. And I happened to be on the board at my church, and I was talking to my pastor, and they're growing extremely rapidly. And I go, now listen, I'm cleaning toilets and you're saving souls, so our missions are, a little different. But I go, what? I go, you've hired all these people. What have you done? You've hired people and you're growing, and they've all been rock stars. What did you do? And he told me this book, WHO, WHO, not World Health Organization, WHO by Jeff Smart. And stupid me, I go, great idea. I put it on my Amazon wish list and then left it there. And finally I buy the book, and I'm going, and I'm literally flipping through it, and like literally every page. It was right when the phones came out with the thing where you could read text, like the phone could extract the text off a page. And I'm flipping through this book, and every page, I'm like, oh wow, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh God, this is great. Every page, it gives you a complete guide on like how to build the job description, how to interview, how to structure the interview, what questions to ask, what you're really asking for sometimes when you're asking the question. And it's and I literally took it and I made my own little cheat guide. And I swear by it now. I mean, I require our staff when we're hiring now, when they're hiring, to use that guide to interview people, because it's a longer interview process. But I feel like I'd rather spend the time up front to find the right person than bring somebody on just kind of based on, a vibe or whatever that you get off the person and have it be a bad fit. So since reading that, I've hired a chief strategy officer, IT director, chief operating officer, VP of marketing. We hired the rest, about four people of in the marketing department. And I'm hiring more IT people right now. I mean, and so now, I mean, we have an executive team of it's about nine people. And I'm one of those anti-meeting people. I used to have like the weekly executive team meeting, and then what I would find is that usually I had chatted with those people throughout the week and knew everything they were working on, and then half the stuff they were working on wasn't relevant to the other people on the team. Like maybe half of it was and half of it wasn't, and so it just turned into this thing where we're sitting in a room for hour and a half, going around the room of, what's the updates and all that sort of stuff. And you're only really getting, 10 minutes of value out of it as each member. So you're going like, wait a minute, this is a waste of time. So we're much more like cross-functional team structured. So if there's a project in marketing that has to go on, it's okay, who does marketing need? What constituent members of the executive board do they need to make this work? Get whatever they need. So, okay, I need operations and finance and whomever. Great. Let's bring them all in together, knock the meeting out, and get back to working on whatever we're working on.
So it's almost like a lot more driven by what you're by development or project or focus for the time. So you're getting together, so people are working together versus oh, just giving like, oh, here's your update, like making it purposeful.
Exactly. So now every meeting is, if there's the only update meeting. So now I still do meetings with each department, and it depends on the position. My COO, I meet with him every week. My marketing VP, marketing still reports up through me at this point. I don't have like a CMO, so we meet twice a month. Strategy, it's a monthly meeting, and it's a lot higher level conversation, and so on. So it's just it depending on the role, and then it ends up being, more focused meetings with specific agendas and specific outcomes we're looking for. And you can kind of do, we don't, we're not technically doing EOS, the Entrepreneur Operating System. We're not technically doing that, but that's basically what we're doing, where it's like, are you on track? We've set the plan. Are you on track? Are you off track? If you're not on track, how can I help you get back on track? And you know, I'm probably a micromanager by nature, but this definitely deliberately forces me to step back, allow the smart people in the room to do their thing, and then just ask my questions on a weekly, biweekly, or monthly basis.
I love what you said about reading the book Who, and that brings me to like think about, one of the biggest things about leadership and bringing the right people into a company is, and I haven't read the book, but to me it's finding that achievement code and what are the values that you have and that you want your company to have and that people can bring that people can you want to bring the people in who have those same not literally the same cookie cutter, but the interview process does have to be longer. And I love what you said, where it's longer to interview them. You're asking different questions, but you're bringing spending more time to bring in the right people than just it's not just a body, because they have to be the
Exactly.
right, it has to be the right fit. And I absolutely love that. And I'll share with you, and I've probably shared this with people before, so listeners, I'm sorry if you hear this again, but I feel like I can't share it enough. And that is having that question that you have as a company that really helps you know whether that person is the right fit is so key. And the one that I tend to like is, what do you do with the cup? Right?
That's a
So,
good one.
right. So, you come in to meet with me, I offer you a glass of water or a cup of tea or something. We go and get it, I give it to you. The interview's over. Now what? What do you do? Do I
That's
leave
a
the cup,
good
right? Do I leave the cup on
one.
the table? Or do I say, hey, Adam, thank you so much. It was a great interview. Oh, and where would you like me to put this cup? Or can you put me back to the conference or the kitchen or wherever I got it from so I can put the cup back? What do I do? Me.
I mean, if you're not asking, I mean, that's a culture question right there.
And so there's twofold for me, a couple of things. Number one is the person comfortable asking a question? Number two, are they the person that's just going to leave paper around? Because I can't stand that, me personally. Like, I want people that are going to pitch in. So that person who's going to ask what to do with the cup, they're the kind that's going to pitch in. I don't know. Anyway, so
I like that. My go-to question is, how many golf balls fit in a 747? And everyone's heard of that as one of those, like, Google, used to ask that in the interview questions. Oh, okay. So apparently Google used to ask these questions to the engineers as part of the interview process, and they actually wanted a number. And they would, you would just be on the spot trying to, do some serious geometry right there. And so I deliberately ask the question, and then I say, now here's what I'm after. Tell me what you're if your job was to fill the 747 with golf balls, how would you go? I need to know what your logic is. What would you think about? What would you ask if that was your job, is to get that done? And I like it because, you get some people that are just like, well, I would figure out the volume and do the math, and they just kind of leave it. And then you have people that are going like, okay, am I flying this thing? Am I putting golf balls in the pipe where the pilots sit? Am I? And I want to see, because my job every day as a CEO is I don't have, oh, every day we do X, Y, and Z. Every day is new. Every day is something different. A lot of the stuff forces me to think outside the box. And so I want to see, does someone stay kind of in the box and ask very basic questions, or do they start thinking outside the box and going like, well, what about, am I
I don't know. Is it a commercial plane? Or is it like a military hangar that's being, I want people to just start get weird with your questions. I said, I literally, I'm like, there's no bad questions. Just go stream of consciousness. And I hope nobody interviewing for Anago is listening to this podcast right now. But I've
It's true, but it's a great question. I mean, whether or not I mean, you could ask the question a thousand different ways. Like, you could say whether you're filling up a an airplane, you could even use a boat. Well, what kind of boat, right? Like, there's so many, or is it a car? Is it, how big of a car? Is it a limo? I mean, like, so many different ways you could think about that. But I like that because it gets people. It's a great question to get people to think, even in general. Are they thinkers? And are they thinkers? And are they able to ask a question? Again, I think those are all great things. And I love how you have a question that gets people thinking so that you can see how will they be once they're here? Are they just are they rote? They're just gonna take, they're just gonna be like, okay, this is how we push the button. Or are they going to be like, oh, you know what? Maybe we should push it this way, not this way, right?
I just I've found that, once you've, I don't know, at the I feel like the people who can only like answer the question inside of, I'm not gonna, I don't want to pick on someone, and but like I'm thinking like mentally like accounting, okay? Accounting is a role where like you have to know the rules and then you execute the rules. And there are people who are very good at knowing and executing the rules, and there are people that are not. And we've all probably had known a good accountant and a bad accountant. But that's extremely scientific, whereas in someone in marketing, in sales, in a senior leadership role, it's a lot more art, right? And it's they're what are the rules? Well, we don't all know, and they're sort of gray and fuzzy. Like, okay, don't, there's, well, we know the laws, and but then, so don't kill somebody, but like also get your job done. You know what
That's
I
right.
mean? So it's how do you operate where the all of a sudden the rules are a little bit more gray, the framework is fuzzier. There's not just if A happens plus B, then you get C. It's, well, you could add A, B, and a number 7 and the number 8 card from Uno that's green. And that's your answer. And if that's the best answer, great.
Right. No,
So
that's
it's the outside the box thinking that I'm after.
Yeah, that's actually really, I really like that. So we know that you want to get to 300 million by 2028. What is your, as a leader, what is something that you want to improve and what are you working on as a leader?
Honestly, I mean, one of the big things I'm continuing to work on is backing away. It's the hardest thing to do when you're the one who's been in it, as literally as blood in the business. I've had people say, I've never seen a CEO be as hands-on as you, and you go like, thank you, question mark. Like, I don't know if that's a compliment. But it is, it's learning your own limitations and saying, okay, I've gotten to a point where this is as smart as I am individually, and now I need sort of the hive mind of the senior leadership. We have a franchise advisory committee, and bringing them in and saying, okay, again, where should we go? Where should we drive this? Here's what I see. Here's what I'm thinking I'm good at and how I can help. But then again, it's just bringing in people who are smarter than you, and then letting them work,
Right.
and getting the heck out of the way sometimes. That's probably what I'm focusing on the most right now, is being CEO and getting out of their way.
Getting out of the way. Well, I absolutely love that. Absolutely love that. So take note, right? That's a huge, huge thing, like getting out of the way of the people that you bring on. So I love that. So Adam, I have loved having you on as a guest and great insight. I mean, seriously, the culture and working with different, you said so many great things, and it's like keeping your all the people that in your different areas, they all work together and they're all your customer, which is really important. And because it's how we treat people, right? We want to treat the people with greatness. And that's, you do that with your customer. So it's really great to hear. How can people get a hold of you and connect with you?
Yeah. So everything is, our website is anagocleaning.com. That's A-N-A-G-O cleaning.com. We're all our social media. So, you know, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, or X, or whatever they call it now. It's all at Anago Cleaning. Yep. And then I'm very active on LinkedIn myself. So if you just look up Adam Pavlitz, and shoot me a message, I'll be sure to respond.
Oh, fantastic. So listeners, please follow him, connect with him, go check out the company, the system, everything, follow him on all the socials. And I so appreciate you being a guest. I am Jacqueline Strominger, the host of Unstoppable Leadership Spotlight. And I thank everybody for listening. And if you also have a great leadership story or a great leader and you'd like to be a guest, please go to leaptoyoursuccess.com and click on podcast and apply to be a guest on our show. So thank you so much. I'm Jacqueline Strominger, and I want to thank you so much for listening to the Unstoppable Leadership Spotlight, Influential Leaders and Their Game-Changing Insights podcast. If you are a successful CEO, entrepreneur, or leader in your industry, and you have insights you would like to share, we want you to be a guest on this program. So please visit go.leaptoyoursuccess.com/podcast. And if you have gotten something out of this interview and you'd like to share the episode on social media, just go ahead and take a screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on socials. If you know somebody who would be a great guest, please tag them on social media and let them know about the show and include the hashtag Unstoppable Leadership Spotlight. I love seeing your posts and your guest suggestions. So we regularly are putting out new episodes and content. So please make sure you don't miss any episodes and go ahead and hit subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and they mean so much to me and my team. You want to know more about the podcast or about Leap to Your Success? Just go to the website, leaptoyoursuccess.com, or follow me, Jacqueline Strominger, on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Just plug in my name, Jacqueline, that's J-A-C-L-Y-N, Strominger, S-T-R-O-M-I-N-G-E-R, and follow me on all the socials. So thank you so much for listening, and remember, be unstoppable.